This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. According to the Indiana Arts Commission, more than 100 Hoosier artists are participating in the annual On-Ramp Creative Entrepreneur Accelerator. It's a special program for artists and creative professionals all across the state, and they take advantage of local partnerships, which in our case includes South Shore Arts. Let's find out more about the program. Paige Sharp is the Deputy Director of Programs for the Indiana Arts Commission. And Paige, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Will you tell us a little bit more about the annual On-Ramp Accelerator, what it's all about, and in particular about the local partnerships that we're working with the IAC?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. So the On-Ramp Creative Entrepreneur Program is an accelerator program, but it's really unique. So it has a three-day intensive entrepreneurship course where the individuals who are selected to participate will come together in person, and they learn the key entrepreneurship skills, like what do you do, who do you serve, what do you need, what does it cost, and how will you monetize it. So these are basically core things that any entrepreneur needs to learn. But the uniqueness of the creative sector is then they come together from the variety of disciplines that they represent. Could be a musician, could be a graphic designer, a fashion designer, a writer. They come together and they're like, oh my gosh, I've found my people. So they go through these 3 days of training. But what's really cool is after that, then they can get a fellowship of $2,000 to take what they learned and put it into action to impact their creative career. So that goes along for like the year following that on-ramp program. So it's both training as well as funding to pursue their really entrepreneurship pursuits. So it's a really great, solid, and performance-based program. So we see outstanding results from those folks that do participate.
What would the IAC consider as being an arts-based small business? Is there, I guess you don't think of an artist being a small business person, but I guess they are in a way, especially if they are either doing their own artwork or if they're producing art to be shown in a gallery or for purchase, for that matter, I guess. So they, I guess, would have to be considered a small business because you're not talking about a room full of people involved in such a business. Usually it's only one person, maybe a couple people, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it is, you know, just like oftentimes when we think about an artist, we think visual art. You know, we forget that there are musicians and writers out there. But absolutely, the other part is, oh, yeah, I don't even think about them being a small business. But there's a lot of folks out there who are making quite a bit of money off of their creativity. And that can be, you know, example could be John Green, who's a, you know, internationally known novelist from Indiana. That is a creative discipline. It's writing. But there's also artists in the state of Indiana that draw for Marvel, for example. But they live here in Indiana because they don't have to be in California. They can just, you know, email their stuff. So it's fashion designers. It's folks that are selling stuff on Etsy. It's folks that are, you know, potters or wanting to make part of their living, you know, selling pottery. So they're very much a big part of the fabric of our state in terms of entrepreneurship. And interestingly, we have almost three times the national average of creative entrepreneurs in Indiana compared to nationally.
Wow.
So nationally, there's a certain amount, almost three times that we see that in Indiana. Cost of living is low here, so maybe that's part of it. But the creatives can be very vibrant and make a good living. Maybe not necessarily entirely from what they do as creatives, but what we would qualify as a portfolio career. But we do see a lot of artists out there. And it can be a little bit of the non-traditional section. So we can see, like, there's Janice Motorcycles. You know, that's an artist. He's a designer. He designed motorcycles. Now does very well. I think he has over 50 employees. So while that person didn't go through our program, that's somebody that we'd bring into the program, for example, to highlight if somebody's successful, so that this folks in the program can learn from somebody who's being successful out there that they could potentially model.
I don't know if there are any in Indiana other than the only one I can think of in particular would be like the Paws Studio that's up in the Muncie area that produces the Garfield comic strips and all of the products for the Garfield universe up there. But I'm sure there are other businesses that are similar to it across the state that for example, animation studios. You don't have to be all in Hollywood or on the West Coast to be able to do that because everything can be done online now. And so I suppose a small business like that could reside in Indiana just as well as any place else, right?
Absolutely, and they do. And, you know, there's in one thing that we do see, you know, you got photography studios. Photographers are a huge part of the creative sector in the state of Indiana. There's many of them out there. But, yeah, absolutely. We have a stop animation artist, Chris Bixby. He works internationally, you know, and he does all this stuff out of his studio in... And I think not the Muncie area, but like Greenfield or something. Yeah, Greenfield.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, and up in the Gary area, we're starting to see interest in doing, you know, publishing. So where publishing sector is kind of a, you know, really changed because everything's online. Well, people are now interested in sort of like actual hand-printed things. So that's coming back to life, too. So we're starting to see people make a living off of, say, screen printing, or letterpress as well in Lake Goshen and emerging in the Gary area too.
We're talking with Paige Sharp, who's the Deputy Director of Programs for the Indiana Arts Commission. The Arts Commission has been partnering with the Indiana Small Business Development Center in creating a program which is called an annual program called On-Ramp Creative Entrepreneur Accelerator. Now, from the research that you all have done in past programs, how have the alumni who have been involved in this program done as far as being able to survive as entrepreneurs, maybe compared to others that haven't been?
What was really interesting when we did research to find out in terms of the impact of COVID on artists, you know, certainly 95% of artists across the entire country were impacted by COVID.
Yeah.
But comparatively, when looking at the research data of the on-ramp graduates, they'd actually fared better through COVID than the artist cohorts who had not been in that program. So we could see that what they learned was really critical to sustainability. So they learned how to save money. They learned how to allocate those resources and what really needs to be charged in order to maintain a creative career. So we see a huge growth certainly after the workshop, but we see maintained growth and understanding of what they learned up after a year even of going through the program, which is really incredible. So it's very strong, and it helps increase the resilience of the artists in our state. So we're really proud to see that long-term benefit.
Now, what did the entrepreneurs that are involved in the program this year get? They put in their applications or their proposals, I guess, for a fellowship. Are they able to be able to get the fellowship and use that in whatever they need to learn to become a very successful business people? And what's the next step that they'll go through now once they finish up the program?
Yeah. Oh my. So right now they submitted a fellowship application. So we asked them, what are you going to do? What did you learn and what are you going to do with these funds to help deepen your creative practice? Some creatives are asking for funding for equipment so that they can scale up their business. But then we also need to know, okay, well, you're going to get this. Then what are you going to do as a result? How is that going to increase your business? Now, it's very different for each individual. Some have already developed partnerships with, say, a school, and that they're going to be working with the school to create, you know, a book based, you know, where, you know, they collaboratively worked to produce something. The projects are very different. Everybody has their own way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
It could be additional training, like they want to learn about their craft. It could be that they're going to travel somewhere and work with a specific artist on something. At the end of the day, they're going to be going through a panel process here in the next couple weeks. So a panel of folks who are sort of field experts, creative entrepreneurs, are going to review those applications. So where they see that it could be strengthened in certain areas, they will provide that input. So it's really great. Like, here has a wonderful idea. But as you know, it's always really helpful to get additional input from other super smart people who are like, oh, that's a great idea. And then these creatives can incorporate that added wisdom. So when they do implement their project over the next year, it has a higher percentage rate of success. So that's the next step. We're going to go through that panel process and get that feedback. And then they're going to go through contract, and then they're going to start their fellowship over the next year. Mm-hmm. And I just want to do a shout out to Sam Love, and who's a creative who went through our program and really spearheaded the training effort in Northwest Indiana, where they hosted it in Munster. And he and his team did a great job. South Shore Arts, Michael Borstein, and then Jason Williams, also a partner on that project. And so I think we had about 14 folks go through that, you know, video artists and writers, graphic designers, all individually are going to do some pretty amazing projects that you can learn more about on our website. Just queuing up on ramp to learn more about the folks that went through the program in your area, mm-hmm. as well as information about what they do here in the future.
Well, it's great to hear. We've had the opportunity to talk with Sam Love in the past about his projects in particular there in Gary. So it's nice to see that he's involved in that. And obviously, by word of mouth and talking with other creative people here in Northwest Indiana, they've all gotten involved in it. As we mentioned earlier in the conversation, that South Shore Arts is one of the partners that the Indiana Arts Commission has been working with on this. This program, you say, is basically a year long, I guess, for this year in particular. Is there any plans for expansion beyond that, or is this just going to be a continual program?
So we do plan on opening up an opportunity for folks to participate in OnRamp. The applications will go live in a couple weeks here. And then the program, the workshop, will be actually this year. It'll be in Noblesville in May of 2022. Mm-hmm. Anybody's welcome that's a creative that's interested in applying to that program. They can just go to our website and learn about it, or sign up for our newsletter and get information that way. The program is entirely free, but it is applications that are evaluated to become part of the program. I highly encourage anybody to go through it if they want to learn more and maybe intersect the STAM and some of the folks over at South Shore Arts, if they want a more personal journey into understanding. There's a lot of creativity up in Northwest Indiana. I was so impressed and so proud of the folks living there and also the pride that they have for their communities. So I would love to see participation from the folks up north. It would be great to continue to serve that area as well in our program that we have opening up here in a short time.
So folks can contact South Shore Arts up here in Munster if they'd like more information, or they can reach you folks directly down at the Indiana Arts Commission, right?
Yeah, I just suggest contacting the Indiana Arts Commission first and foremost, and then I can refer them to folks if they want a more direct understanding of, folks who went through the program. But mm-hmm. absolutely, contact the Indiana Arts Commission. They're more than welcome to contact me. And those guidelines and the application will be live in 2 weeks.
That's great. Paige Sharp is the Deputy Director of Programs for the Indiana Arts Commission, and the Indiana Arts Commission working with the Indiana Small Business Development Center to come up with the continuation of the annual On-Ramp Creative Entrepreneur Accelerator. It helps artists and creative professionals all around the state through the local partnerships that we mentioned, the South Shore Arts in particular up here, to help get them off to a good start to be solid entrepreneurs and help not only develop their skills as artists, as well as business people. And thank you very much, Paige, for the information, and hope the program goes well this year.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
You're welcome. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. There's some big things happening these days at the Mascot Hall of Fame in Whiting, including an opportunity for you to be able to vote for the mascot of your choice to be there. Let's find out more by talking with Karen Anisevit, who is the acting executive director of the Mascot Hall of Fame in downtown Whiting. And Karen, thank you for joining us on the program today.
No, thank you for having me. This is exciting.
Will you tell us first, for folks that are not necessarily familiar with the Hall of Fame, it's not exactly Whiting's best-kept secret, but a lot of folks in the area are just really learning about the Mascot Hall of Fame these days, aren't they?
Yes. So the Mascot Hall of Fame, like as you said, is in Whiting, Indiana, and it is a Hall of Fame for mascots. But not only is it the National Hall of Fame for mascots, it's also an interactive children's museum.
That's interesting. Now, the Hall of Fame has been around for a little while, but I think the pandemic seemed to mess things up, and I think maybe some folks thought it had disappeared entirely. That's not been the case, has it?
No, not at all. So we opened the day after Christmas in 2018. We were open for 13 months. And then, of course, because of the pandemic, we actually had to shut down for 13 months. So we reopened in April. We're on a limited basis, but we reopened, feet on the ground and running fast to catch up. You know, we're really doing well at the museum.
Now, all the activities outside the Hall of Fame certainly had to be cut back in a lot of cases because of social distancing and the closing of a lot of facilities. How did the Hall of Fame manage to be able to survive all of this? What have you had to do, certainly, to be able to continue to keep the health and safety precautions going?
Well, you know, we shut down, of course, you know, during the heart of the pandemic, if you want to say that. And had staff diligently working to keep us alive with social media and online programming, you know, for the kids and keeping up with the mascot.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we've reopened our doors, right now we're open on Saturdays only for the general public. We are open for two play sessions. We are open from 10 to 1. And then we shut down for a super deep clean. And then we're open from 2 to 5 for the second play session.
Mm-hmm.
We're open during the week for field trips and group outings, and we do a lot of corporate events. But what's nice is that being closed during the week, we're allowed to offer field trips to schools that are exclusive. You don't have to worry about other people in the building and any additional exposure that you might not want.
I guess that's the advantage of being able to make reservations during the week, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Now we have, of course, a very exciting times coming up here. Actually, this week, starting October 3rd, the citizens of Northwest Indiana and anywhere in the world, I suppose, if you're a fan of mascots, you can vote for your favorite mascot to become a member of the Hall of Fame. Will you explain how the contest that's underway is going to go and some of the thoughts behind it?
Sure. Okay. So basically, we our executive committee, through nominations from schools, formed what we call our ballot. There are 24 mascots on it right now, and these 24 mascots are competing to get onto our second ballot, our 10 finalists. And after those 10 finalists are voted on, we will have anywhere between two and we don't know how many mm-hmm. Mascots inducted into the Mascot Hall of Fame.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's really a neat process because not only do we have, you know, a team of professionals in our executive committee doing the voting and the nominating, but the public's voice is actually heard. The public's voice actually counts in this vote. So it's fun to watch the process. Now, so our second round of voting will start October 17th with our top 10 that go into the next round. So, and then the mascots that are on the ballot came through from nominations from schools, from the committees. And this is our second one that I've been involved in, and it's a really interesting process.
When you put this out for the public to choose mascots, are you taking in virtually any mascot? We're talking about ranging from high school all the way up through college and pro?
Well, no, not yet. High school is not part of the process, but we do have a collegiate. And we have semi-professional teams and professional teams. Plus, we can do independents.
Wow. Well, that's still quite a few mascots when you think about going into the Hall of Fame. That's a lot of people that would be eligible. The mascots, we should say. Pardon me. That should be eligible for this, too. As well as having the vote that's underway. By the way, when is the vote going to wrap up now?
This first round of voting actually wraps up on the 9th, mm-hmm. and then we take a week off and we open our second round of voting on the 17th.
I see. All right. Now, looking ahead now into next month, into November, in fact, November 5th in particular, it's a Friday evening, and it's a very, very big night, a big celebration and fundraiser with the accent on fun. It's called it's called Cue the Confetti. Will you tell us some of the thoughts behind that and what is going to happen on that very special night?
Absolutely. We are so excited about our Cue the Confetti celebration. It is, as you said, November 5th, and it's from 7 to 10 p.m. We've got, this is where the actual announcement for our 2022 two inductees will happen. So people that are at the fundraiser will be the first to know who's actually being inducted into the museum next year. Now, we've got some fun stuff lined up for. We have Slider from the Cleveland Indians will be there with his band Slider and the Dogs for entertainment. We will have it will be co-hosted by Blue from the Indianapolis Colts.
Wow.
And we'll have many other mascot appearances. We'll have ballpark-style food. There's music. There's a silent auction that you could actually look at online, and that's at mhof.givesmart.com. And lots of good stuff there, lots of good stuff if you're a sports fan.
Now, if anybody's interested in getting tickets for this big event coming up here, the Cue the Confetti event on November 5th, how can they do so?
Sure. You can either go to our website at mascothalloffame.com and follow the links, or you can go directly to our fundraising website. That's mhof.givesmart.com.
Are you hoping that starting maybe with this big event in November that things will open up a bit more so that you'll be able to keep the Mascot Hall of Fame open more than just to the public, more than just on Saturdays?
We definitely are. We definitely are. We're going in the right direction as far as having guests and events. And we think that this will drive it even better for us.
Karen Anisevich is the acting executive director of the Mascot Hall of Fame in Whiting. And Karen, thank you very much for being with us. The best of luck to all. And we hope that this big Cue the Confetti event coming up on November 5th is a big success.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me.
This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversation to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
I'm Croatian, and when I was a kid, it mattered. My dad was Croatian. My grandfather is George Davich. He was a city worker for the city of Gary, street department, and he was a typical Croatian guy. Shirt off in the summertime, loud Croatian music, and tambourines is going on. Barbecuing a lamb spit in the front yard, being proud of it so your neighbors see you're doing this lamb kind of thing. And, you know, very charismatic and gregarious. And I didn't realize it matters so much, but when I was a kid and I'd go to places with my dad, they would always ask, are you Croatian or are you Serbian? You know, and I'd go, Croatian. Oh, you know, it's either you get embraced with a hug or you go, I'm Serbian, that kind of stuff. And then that trails away with the, I don't know, maybe homogenization of America, the whitewashing of America. It doesn't matter at all now. Now I ask people if they're Croatian or Serbian just out of kicks. I'm just kind of curious if they even know or if they care. Generally, people don't care. But back then, it mattered. My mom was a Protestant. She married my dad, who was a Catholic. It was a big deal. You know, it was like a biracial marriage. I'm thinking nobody liked that at all. So they had to deal with those kind of ethnic, you know, problems, which I don't even recognize these days. But yeah, back then it mattered. It mattered very much. I was the baby of the family. We all grew up in this small little cracker box of a house that I didn't realize was so small until I went back as an adult. And we were just fine. We lived in the Miller section of Gary at 4513 Miller Avenue. It's called Ryan Subdivision. It was built by a guy named, I think, Glenn Ryan, who built a subdivision called Glenn Ryan Subdivision. It's across the tracks from Aetna. It's near the steel mills. I didn't realize till I was maybe in middle school or older that I was on the wrong side of the tracks. I thought I was on the right side of the tracks, but apparently I was on the wrong side of the tracks. It was the poor side of the tracks. When you go to school in Wirt High School in Miller, it's located near the lakefront and the lakeshore, and that's where all the swell houses are and the bigger buildings and houses and kids who had money and affluence and cars, stuff like that. They all kind of lived around there by the lake. Glen Ryan Subdivision was 2 or 3 miles or more away, and I'd walk to school occasionally when I missed the bus. And you'd realize that walking, things are getting progressively better. You know what I mean? And then I had to walk past what was called back then a ghetto off of Lake Street in Miller, which is still kind of there. I don't think they call it a ghetto anymore, but it was. So I got to see these different neighborhoods along the way to school. I remember there was a lot of black kids back in middle school and high school who were, they were on welfare. And that's what we called it. We called it on welfare. And they had welfare tickets and free lunches. And they would sell those welfare-free lunches so they can get money so they can buy drugs or other things they wanted, just fun things, whatever. And that was a kind of an early economic lesson for me of how things work in the real world. They sell their free lunches every day to me, this, you know, stupid white kid who would buy a 40-cent lunch for like a quarter or a dollar lunch for 50 cents. I'd get the discount, and he'd get a discount. We thought we were the two brilliant kids in the whole school. There was one guy, he would just sell his all these lunch tickets, or welfare tickets, as we called them, over and over. And I thought he was the smartest guy in the whole world. He's gonna be like a genius businessman someday. He might be, I don't even know. So these are things that I kind of learned that I didn't realize I was learning. I thought every kid just did this in every school. until I get older and realize, hey, this is kind of different, this is kind of cool. And I wouldn't replace that. You know, I wouldn't want to give that back.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back with you tomorrow.